Up next, we're going to talk about manifestation, the ability to change your life. Maureen St. Germain with us, her latest work, Beyond the Flower of Life. We'll have her explain what that title means when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Let me introduce Maureen St. Germain. Has more than 25 years of experience in the area of mystical and sacred traditions. Known as the Practical Mystic, Maureen is a very prolific teacher and facilitator of spiritual knowledge for contemporary life. A lifelong interest in the Akashic Records resulted in her being granted access to this dimension that has been off limits to most of humanity for millions of years. Founder of the Akashic Records International, Maureen is also an extremely accurate Akashic Records guide and instructor. Maureen, welcome back to the program.
Hi, George. Thanks for having me again, and happy 4th.
You too. Thanks for sharing your Independence Weekend with us. That's great.
It's a pleasure, truly.
Did you see any fireworks today?
Oh, my gosh. We went up on the roof, and I stopped counting at about 35 different displays.
It's amazing, too, if you can hear them in addition to seeing them. It just makes it even better, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And it was so fun to see all my neighbors up on the roof and just, you know, it's like a party up there.
And you're out there on the East Coast, aren't you?
I am. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How's the weather?
Beautiful. It was a beautiful night, clear, balmy. I couldn't ask for a better evening.
Tell me about the title, Beyond the Flower of Life.
Well, the book was written as a follow-up initially to the meditation practice known as the Merkaba, and it's also known as the Flower of Life. So that symbol that people call the Flower of Life, which is the Circle of Circles, is the nickname for the actual meditation, because they called the class the Flower of Life.
And I introduced part of your bio as a practical mystic. What is that?
Well, it was a nickname given to me by famous Wisconsin mystics, and it stuck. The woman who wrote that book was writing about people who were well known in the area. I like to think that it's the fact that I'm a mom and a wife and a, you know, person in the reality that I want to make my spiritual tools useful. I'm not interested in parlor games. I want it to work for me.
And they do work for you.
They do. I have so many experiences that it's been worthwhile, yeah.
How did you get this gift? Were you born with it?
I think so, yes. But it's also a gift that I share with people and help them find their way to their gift, you know, whatever that might be.
How do you pull that out of them?
Well, I tend to be very practical in the sense that I teach them a protocol, and the protocol is very simple. It's three basic things. You do this practice for 45 days, and the practice consists of asking unimportant, insignificant questions all day long of your higher self. And we go through a meditation, and we identify what does it feel like when you invite your higher self to give you a yes signal or a no signal. And then the second thing we do is we don't cheat it. That means we only ask the higher self questions that we don't care about. So if I want to have a cookie, I'm going to eat it. I'm not going to ask. And if I'm not willing to follow through, then that's like against that idea. And then the third thing is to stay with it for the 45 days so that you can get practice and you get to understand what that feeling is. A lot of people are familiar with it. They'll say, oh, yeah, if I get this certain feeling in my gut, or if I get a certain, you know, ping in my ear or whatever, I know, don't take that step. And so what I do is I teach people to hone that, and then they grow their communication with their inner wisdom or their inner guru.
When I was a youngster, raised as a Catholic, I didn't go to parochial school. I went to public school. So those of us who went to public school went to catechism classes with the Catholic Church, where they taught us all these different things. And we used to have a teacher, Maureen, who would talk to us about the Book of Records. And she used to say and stress, everything you do in your life goes into this Book of Records. Is that the same thing as the Akashic Records?
Yes, it is. And Edgar Cayce called it the Book of Records. And he referred to it in his readings. And when he was asked, where does your information come from? He said, from the person and from the Akashic Records. He actually called it the Book of Life. And then when they said, well, what is the Book of Life? He said, it is the Akashic Records.
What does Akashic mean?
The word Akashic is Sanskrit, and it stands for sky. But when we refer to it as the Akashic Records, it's got a new meaning, or a new common meaning, meaning the data bank that exists outside of our everyday thinking that we can access to get information.
Who puts the information in the records? How does it get there?
I don't know the answer to that, to be honest. I think it's kind of like our computers, you know. I didn't save that. How did it get there?
Yeah.
It's still there.
I didn't do it.
But at the same time, I was told in the when I was in the records and asking this kind of a question, I was told that the data set or the records were created so that there would be an opportunity to review activity or actions or choices. And so that's what I understand.
When we die, do we kind of go up to this courtroom of records where these, you know, angels or whomever might be there holding up this record going, you did this, you did that?
I think it's even more personal than that. I think your life review is so real that it's almost like a movie, and it's almost instantaneous, and it's an opportunity for you to look at everything you've done, good and bad, and see it from a larger standpoint, which is exactly what happens in the records. When we go into the records, it's for soul growth. So when you access the records for a specific question, like, why did my friend tell me this when it wasn't true? And you go into the records and you get a much bigger picture and you get to understand why something happened. There was a man who called in on a radio show that I was on a few years ago, and he was asking why his daughter treated him so badly, because he felt he was a good father and he'd done everything he was supposed to, he thought. And here she is, a young adult, and she's still, you know, acting in a very obnoxious way towards him. And the record keeper said, you were arch enemies in a previous life.
Oh, geez.
You moved on and became spiritual, and in this lifetime.
And a good father.
Right, and a good father. And in this lifetime, she came in and you sponsored her because she didn't keep moving like you did, and you agreed to hold space for her. So now it's your turn to just love her anyway, and she'll step up. But it might take a few years. That last part was really funny, because
a few years or a few lifetimes.
Years, oh my gosh.
Maybe a few lifetimes too.
Yeah, maybe.
Which is possible.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
The Akashic records are stored in some kind of depository in heaven or hell or where?
The record keepers answer this question in a dual way, because there are spiritual teachers that say it's in your DNA. And I questioned that, because I didn't. My understanding was that the Akashic Records are in the 11th dimension, which it would be a more finely tuned dimension, kind of thinking like radio signals. But the idea is that your local immediate information is in your DNA, and then the larger, bigger picture, the, you know, data bank of everything and everyone is in the 11th dimension.
Well, why do we need the Akashic Records or this book of records? Because, you know, I personally remember just about everything I've done, good or bad. So why do we need a book of records to remind us?
Well, number one, not everyone does remember. And number two, we have our own perception. We've all seen movies where they show us, you know, the lead actor's version of what happened, and then they show, you know, someone else's version of what happened, and they're not always an exact match. And the second reason is because we're making choices based upon our immediate knowing, and in the records we might have, as you just defined, lifetimes of knowing that change how we look at things. So it gives us a much bigger picture to help us make a more loving choice. You know, if I know, for example, that you know, so a person murdered his wife in a previous lifetime, and in this lifetime, she can't seem to get away from him, and he seems like a nice guy, but they don't always get along. You know, if she knows, well, he wants to make it up to her, and he's doing his best, you know, it helps her adjust and decide what she wants to do from a much larger vantage point.
Well, when you're being reviewed, do they pull up your past lives, too?
Not when you die, not that review, but it's available in the records. So typically you're seeing the ideas of the themes that you followed. And when you look at it from a bigger vantage point, you know, it's like somebody holds you up at lunch and they finally call you and say, "Hey man, I'm not going to make it." And you're mad. You know, you think, "Well, you stood me up. Why did you leave me hanging?"
I think you saved $40.
And they tell you they were in a car accident. So you go, "Oh man, are you okay?"
Yeah.
But up until that moment, you're going to say, "Hey, what kind of a friend are you to leave me hanging like this?"
Well, does the review determine your reincarnation abilities for the future? Well, I mean, once they review you on what you did in this life, then what do they do with it?
Okay, so first of all, the review is a self-review. So you're looking at a movie of what you have done. And in that process, you can evaluate what you did. I mean,
almost like the Truman Show.
As a parent, you know, I've yelled at my kids, and although I never said anything obscene, there are times that I was a little fierce or repetitive and didn't need to be.
Well, but what's wrong with that? You have to be stern sometimes with kids. I mean, you don't have to be violent, but, I mean, you have to be forceful.
Well, all I can say is that in doing what I was doing when I was yelling at one of my kids and my cat came up and put her paw on my leg and then moved her claws into me, I just my eyes got really big and I looked at my sons. I have four sons, and I looked at the one who was in trouble and I said, "I guess I'm done." And we all burst out laughing because I realized I had repeated myself, you know, and he probably heard me the first time.
And the cat was the intermediary, huh?
Indeed.
Interesting take.
Indeed.
Well, once you do this review of your life, and
Once you do your life, then you are probably given choices. And again, it's a self-review. So if you look at your life, and the people who have had life reviews and then come back because they were told you're not done, they get a chance to either fix it or do more good or whatever. You know, a lot of times people who have been back speak of these events. I have been out, but I haven't remembered those events yet. I'm still working on that one.
Interesting. Can anybody access their Akashic records now?
Oh, sure. Everybody can access their records, and that's the big deal. This, you know, in this particular age, this era, the whole reason we, each of us, have been given the opportunity to learn how to open the Akashic records is because we're at the end of an age, we're getting ready to level up, and we're bringing everybody with us.
Interesting take on that. What if you don't like your records? What if they're horrible? Can you change it? Can you, like, erase it?
Well, I think you can, yeah. I think you most certainly can. But I also think that the minute you see something you've done that you could have done better, kinder, more loving, whatever, you already have changed. And that is what is required. You don't have to do it over. What's required is to comprehend that you could behave in a different way.
Can you access my records? Can I access yours?
If you give me permission.
If I don't?
Then if I were to try, I would get some, you know, bogus stuff. I would never get the accurate information.
Why would somebody want to access somebody else's records in the first place?
Lots of times people are nosy. They, you know, they have a loved one that they've lost, and they want to know what's going on with them. Sometimes parents are nosy because their adult son or daughter hasn't gotten married yet or stuff like that.
The name of the book, Beyond the Flower of Life, Maureen's website is her name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Tell us about the Merkaba. What is that?
The Merkaba is a specific shape. It looks like a star tetrahedron or a...
Is that what's on your cover?
It is very similar to what's on my cover, yes.
Okay.
That was an artistic version of it. And that shape is a vehicle of light that we turn on and spin. So we we have three of those nested on top of each other, and then they turn in opposite directions, and one remains stationary. So you see this image is very moving. It looks like it wants to take off.
What does Merkaba mean?
The meaning is Mer stands for light, Ka stands for spirit, and Ba stands for body. So it's a counter-rotating spirit-filled light.
Is it a good thing?
Oh, yeah. When you activate your Merkaba, and you don't always have to have, go through the process of learning. Some people, connect to it somehow and are able to activate it without taking the training. But it's a very good thing because it helps you be your fifth dimensional self, whether you've earned it or not.
You've written in your book about black helicopters. Tell me about that. You've got a chapter 7, black helicopters.
And the whole black helicopter scene is so wild. And just tonight, someone saw I was on your show and wrote me and told me their black helicopter experience, and they weren't even doing the Merkaba, but they were doing a very light-filled activation. And I believe what happens is anybody who's sending out a beautiful light signature that you and I might not see, those people who monitor unusual events on the planet, they see it, and they have to go investigate.
Tell me more.
Well, there are so many incidences of people having experiences with the black helicopters that I realized I needed to start teaching it in the class, because they were having these experiences and then calling me, or they were reacting in a way that was they were frightened. And my response has always been, their job is to keep track of everything that's going on, and if something such as an alien energy shows up on their monitors, they're obligated to go check it out. They're not going to hurt anybody, but, if you have a floodlight shining in your bedroom window, in the middle of the night, and then there's no information on the news, it's pretty freaky.
It is freaky, sure. Who is flying, piloting the black helicopters?
That is a very good guess that I have never explored, because I figure if it's their job to check us out, I don't need to be concerned about them. And I've never heard any story where anyone had any kind of adverse experience, never had any, like someone pulling them out of bed or anything like that. I've had them in broad daylight, so I figure they're there. And, every once in a while, I'll telepath a message, something like, well, I'm not that important. And then they go away. Or, I make myself invisible, another intention, So it's possible for them to leave. But when they know you know who they are, it changes,
Are they physical helicopters?
Say it again.
Are they physical helicopters or illusions?
They are real physical helicopters, and they're not always black, although the majority of them are. Sometimes they're plain white, but they don't have any markings on them. And that's what's so unnerving. Because if you look up in the sky and a helicopter's, nearby, and you can read the lettering, and there is no lettering to read, you're thinking, what the heck?
Now, generally, what are these helicopters doing?
That's exactly the question you have in your head. And if you can't answer it, then you get scared because you think, well, are they friend or foe? And what do I do?
Do they follow
people?
How do I
make them go away?
Do they follow people?
I've never seen them follow people. They just come and hover. And it is the hovering that's so unnerving. Because helicopters don't normally hang out unless, like in San Diego, they've got, 20 or 30 helicopters that the actual police use, but they use floodlights, but you can see their markings,
So what do you think these are?
Personally,
gut tell you?
I think you want to think about the movie Men in Black and say, well, it's sort of like that. And they're there because I'm putting out an energy signature that is significantly different than most humans, and that signature is noticeable to whatever devices they have. I don't think it's radar, but I think it operates like radar in the sense that they're able to find an anomaly and then track it and, come and check it out.
Hold on, Maureen. We're going to take a break. We'll come back for more on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Maureen St. Germain. Her latest work is Beyond the Flower of Life. Where do we get this book, Maureen?
It's available on Amazon. It's available on my website. It's available in bookstores, pretty much everywhere.
You've got some good bestsellers out there, don't you?
I do. I'm very fortunate. I worked hard and made a lot of mistakes and learned a lot.
Remember Be a Genie?
I Classic. Do, and I'm so happy you did. That was right after your mother passed.
And no, my mother's still alive. It was my
well, there
my,
was some,
my father.
Someone in your life that may have passed?
My sister did.
Oh, maybe that's what it was.
Yeah, mom's 92 and still kicking.
Oh, that's awesome.
She keeps...
My mom lived in her mid-90s as well. That's awesome.
And she acts like she's in her 40s.
And doesn't she listen to the show?
Yep. Yep.
That's what I thought.
She is one
cool.
of a kind. She is
very
probably listening right now going, Maureen, yeah. I'm alive!
Yeah. Oh, dear. Please tell her I am so sorry. Yeah, Be a Genie is a fabulous book on sacred geometry and how to manifest. And it's tied to this whole idea that you can take a set of numbers that people use to create the Fibonacci sequence, and then you turn around and you use it for manifestation.
Let's get back to these black helicopters for
okay.
a moment. So you say they're physical.
Yes, they're very physical. And you know, recent stories...
So, I mean, a human could touch it. You could feel it, right, if it landed?
Yeah, I mean, they're close enough. It's not like it's a figment of your imagination. It's not in the dream time or anything like
Let's
that.
Say it's not,
recent stories in my...
It's not a hologram. It's real.
It's real. It's a physical helicopter with noise and everything. You know, and you know, they're close enough that you can see where there would be markings on the vehicle, and there are none.
Nothing. Okay.
Yeah. There's a story, a recent story from somebody that I'm working with this year, where she was on the freeway, and a helicopter literally, it looked like it was going to land on her car, and she's driving, you know, at 60 miles an hour.
Whoa.
And there's another story of a guy who was working on an art project, and that black helicopters came at night. There's other stories where they've come and just hovered over the building that they're in, you know, and they wonder what's going on. There's a story next door just 2 years ago where I was working with a bunch of people, and this helicopter was hanging out in our neighborhood and just hanging with no markings. And, you know, somebody's posted, what's that helicopter doing, and why is it still here? It's been here for like half an hour. So...
Do they get close enough where you can look in and see the pilot?
Not that I know of. Although one story that is a true story from a guy who was sitting on the fire escape in the city here, and the helicopter came right up 8th Avenue and turned to use their equipment on him. And that's when he chased himself back into the window, through the window and back in the apartment and closed the blinds. But he didn't see the driver, but it most certainly happened. And he said to me, Maureen, I don't smoke weed. I don't do drugs. This was pretty freaky for me.
Well, the fact that you've devoted a chapter to this means that you're concerned about them or puzzled.
Well, I'm concerned about the people who are having the experience so that they don't get scared. You know, it's like a child who's afraid of a certain kind of a dog. If you explain to the child that the dog is just that kind of a dog and it won't hurt you, then the child will calm down. But if you don't know, you just get frightened. You know, when I was a child, I was terrified of German Shepherds because our neighbor dog would just come racing out of the porch and start barking at you like crazy when we went over to the well to turn on the...
Did you ever get bitten by one?
Yeah, when one of my kids got one, I said, I've always been afraid of them. I don't really remember why. And my brother chimed in and said, don't you remember the neighbor's dog? And that's when I remembered.
That's
but up until that moment, I did not remember. So, you know, people have fears that come up for whatever reason. And having an unexplained helicopter, whether it's black or white, and having it hang, having it come near, having it shine a floodlight in your window, you know, it's pretty freaky.
I'm going to take calls with Maureen next hour. Now, you also talk about manifesting to make things happen for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best way to do that, in your opinion?
In my opinion, the best way to do it is to go to what I would call the after event. So let's say somebody wants to be married. They don't go to the wedding. They go to an anniversary where you're happy and you're celebrating and you're expressing your gratitude.
Is this through meditation?
No, I take people through. I just walk you through like a visual in your mind's eye.
Okay.
And then I also ask them to imagine a conversation, because I maintain that there's three elements to this manifestation. One is the inner awareness or the visual, and then the conversation brings it into 3D, and then the joy or the happiness, the emotion anchors it to you. So it is the three parts of it that bring it in. And so many people who try to manifest, all they do is to visualize, and they stand at the edge of the castle or whatever it is they're trying to manifest, trying to figure out how to get in. And I like to say, we're going in the back door. You're already in the castle. You've held your Christmas party there, and everyone loved it, like that. And then you talk to a friend, and they say, you know, how did you do this? And you say, well, you know, I worked on this and this, and you tell that story. So the manifestation becomes real because you've seen yourself tell someone how awesome it is.
Tell me, Maureen, about the dreams and manifestating. Is that conceivable, that in your dream state you can make things happen?
Yeah, if you know how to do lucid dreaming, which is participating in your dream. A lot of times, though, people have dreams that are precognitive, and they're actually seeing what they're going to be doing.
Right.
Because they've you know, created some kind of a track, and they're following that track. And then, you know, the big lighthouse or the big light bulb at the end is noticeable to them, so they go there, and then they see themselves in it. But it's usually because they've made some kind of contract or agreement at some point in their life or before they came in, so they've had a setup. You know, it's like me agreeing to do something with someone, but it's so much in the future that I think about it a lot rather than just going to doing it.
What do you think is the easiest way of making things happen for yourself in a positive way?
I start with a happy dance. I see myself, you know, doing something fun or funky that would express my happiness. And then I see myself telling someone that's important to me, either my mom or my husband or, you know, close friend, you know, I'm so blown away that it finally happened and I got what I wanted and it worked. And we're going to, you know, we grew the school and the school took off. And, you know, now I have thousands of students all over the world.
Tell us about the Ascension Institute that you founded.
Yes. Well, you tapped right into me. You must be plugged in as well. And that is something that I started about 5 years ago, and we're growing it into a school so that people can take classes not only from me but from other people on esoteric subjects. And the subjects can be anything from, palm reading or understanding the Akashic Records, like mm-hmm. what I teach, but also people can teach other kinds of skills that are useful in everyday life.
People learn by Zoom, computer, how does it work?
Right now, people are learning by Zoom, and that's what we all went to when we got kind of put back in our little homes and said, stay home for a while. But I'm also expecting people to come into my facility and work with me there in real time, because that's where you get some really deep work, when people can show up and be with you one-on-one. And they also can interact with each other in a more personal way. You know, when you're on Zoom, you get to interact with people, but it never feels quite as personal as when you're in person.
No, that's true. I mean, I've had some live events on Zoom, but it's nothing like being there, you know, in person.
Right. You don't get the tenor of the function as easily, and you don't tap into what everyone else is kind of feeling or acting. And a lot of times, you know, when you're on Zoom, you can't see everyone's head nod, but in a room,
or eyes roll.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, so I personally have enjoyed working on Zoom because it's given me an opportunity to reach people that I wouldn't otherwise. You know, for years I was traveling to China or Asia, you know, Japan, China, Taiwan, and teaching, and I'd be gone for 3 weeks and then come back, and I'd do that anywhere from 3 to 5 times a year, and that was very, very intense. And to be able to hold those classes on Zoom is amazing, because I can, you know, get up and you know, do my morning routine and have a cup of tea and then do the class, and we're done for the day, and I haven't traveled. You know, travel, I love to travel, but it is kind of hard on your body. So it's an opportunity. It has created opportunities that we didn't have before. I will tell you, though, many people are saying to me that they're waiting till they can come and work with me in person. And so, sure, you know, we do the best we can with the Zoom.
Joseph Gallenberger is a guest of ours who does studies in Las Vegas with different groups of people. And he is convinced that attitude has a tremendous amount to do with what happens, your ability to succeed or not. What do you think of that?
I think that's true. I think that the matrix we hold for ourselves on a daily basis attracts to us what we more of the same, and the universe always gives us more of what we think about. So if we think about, okay, now what else can happen, and you're complaining, you're going to get more of that. And when you focus on what you enjoy and you are in a place of gratitude, that emotion attracts more things that will make you filled with gratitude. When I was looking for a job, I would go to the gym and say loud enough for me to hear, not so much that anyone would understand me, you know, these phrases about they will love me as much as I love them. And, you know, I then got a job where the whole staff absolutely loved working with me and I loved working with them. And so I wasn't involved in like office politics that I had in previous jobs where, you know, there was always competition and that kind of thing. So I created that just by the saying those phrases. But what if you saw yourself in the environment and having people say, you know, we're so happy you came to work for us. That proves that you already are working there and that you already got a job in a place where people love you.
You seem enlightened, Maureen. Have you ever come across, though, demonic things or evil things? Has that happened to you?
Once in a while, when I am with someone who is wrestling with that and I've pulled something off of someone and then I ground because, for example, I had a client and a dolphin swim with me, and she was clinging to her husband like he was the life raft. And, you know, it got to a point where I said, look, I'll be your safety partner. You're not going to swim with him anymore. And when she jumped in the water and grabbed hold of me, I felt this horrible energy. I felt like I was going to drown. And I'm not only a safety swimmer, but I've got my life-saving certificates. And
so you're a good swimmer.
I'm a really good swimmer. I pulled people out of the water. My mother said I have a place in heaven because I pulled a nun out of our family pool one time.
Was she sinking?
Yeah, she was drowning. And, we were in a farm and we had a big pool. And
how deep was the pool?
12 foot.
That's a pretty big family pool.
Yeah, yeah. My father always did things that way. Anyway, so when getting back to your question, you know, when you pull something off of someone like that, I immediately grounded it and sent it to Mother Earth, and then I was fine. But for a brief few seconds, I felt like I was going to drown. And as soon as that happened, the woman who was terrified looked at me, her eyes got really big, and she said, "It's gone. I'm not afraid anymore." So there was some entity or energy that was possessing her and making her think she was going to drown. And that literally made you feel like you were going to lose it.
But it passed on to you.
It passed on to me because I was holding her. I was her safety swimmer. And then
Had you not touched her, would that have happened?
No. No.
You wouldn't have had
absolutely
that.
Not, because I knew this woman. I taught her in other classes. I was friends with them, was giving them hugs, that kind of thing. But it was in the moment of her fear that I was able to pull it off of her. And I didn't intentionally pull it off of her. It just moved into me as I was trying to calm her down. You're fine, you're safe, you know, that kind of thing. And suddenly I'm feeling what she was feeling. And so that's when I, you know, okay, go into Mother Earth. And I've had this happen to me once before in an energetic situation, a cognitive dream where I pulled something off of someone. And I'd call it like a spider's web or, you know, like a fishnet stocking that would be over your whole body, that particular energy. And I call it a death wish or an energy that wants you to want to die. And that particular kind of energy, you know, moved through me and went into the earth and it was fine. But when you have that experience, it's rare, at least for someone like me. I, you know, those are few and far between.
Was it a horrible feeling for you?
Very horrible. It's so horrible that for half a second you don't know what to do. And because I'm plugged in, I think what happens is in those moments I open up. What do I do? You know, I don't think that I'm consciously saying, what do I do? I think it's like this, you know, send a signal to source or my higher self or my guides. You know, I'm in trouble here. What do I do? And then that energy of calmness allows me to take action and then to imagine that it's sliding off of me like a stocking and going into the earth.
That's pretty dramatic. Maureen St. Germain with us. Her latest book, Beyond the Flower of Life. Her website is her name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're going to take calls next hour for her as we talk about manifesting and positioning. What would you say is the best exercise people can do to strengthen their inner self? Is there one?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. Simple things that you can do. You can ask to be wake up in 5D. And I do this every night. My husband and I have a little prayer that we say. And one of the words, one of the sentences is, I'm asking to wake up in 5D. And so that strengthens your bond to your more evolved self.
Interesting. And it's not that difficult to do, is it?
No, it's not. And then another thing a person can do is to say, I'm asking for a day of heaven on earth for me and everyone I am in contact with and everyone I am in contract with. And what happens is, you know, let's say you walk into the bank and the clerk has had a horrible conversation with a previous person and you're watching this whole thing and you're thinking, oh, man, I had to get her.
I'm next. Yeah.
Exactly. And you walk up to her and everything's all roses and you know.
We say peachy keen.
Peachy keen.
You got it. Maureen, we're going to take a break. We'll come back and take calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.